Our podcast reviews well-known movies and contains spoilers. The podcast may contain mature subject matter and mature language. Listener discretion is advised. Enjoy the show.
Quiet on set. Places, everybody. And action.
Time once again for the Hooked on Movies podcast. We continue the horror movie theme with the 1979 film, The Amityville Horror. And with me, as always, of course, our Ken.
Well, sure, but houses don't have memories.
And Ted.
I'm coming apart. Oh, mother of God, I'm coming apart.
Nice.
You're coming all right.
Oh, look at that. The wheel locked.
Wow.
How about a mechanical defect? I blame Detroit a lot faster than the devil. Seems like every month there's some kind of recall. And remember,
must have been GM.
Amity means friendship. That's right, we're not talking Jaws, we're talking Amityville Horror. But that was, of course, the mayor of Amity Island.
Yes, it was.
Gotta love it. Murray Hamilton, he's everywhere. All right, we're talking Amityville Horror, the movie that kicked it off. Whether you like the movie or you don't like the movie, you can't deny the marketing power of this phenomena. And we're going to be talking about that. Tell us some of the particulars of this movie for someone who's been under a rock since 1979.
Amityville Horror is directed by Stuart Rosenberg. It is a screenplay by Sandor Stern. It's based off of the novel The Amityville Horror by Jay Anson. It has a running time of 118 minutes. It was released July 27th, 1979. It had a budget of $4.7 million and a box office gross of $86.4 million. Amityville Horror stars James Brolin as George Lutz, Margot Kidder as Kathleen Lutz, Rod Steiger as Father Francis Delaney, Don Stroud as Father Bolin, Murray Hamilton, as we discussed, is Father Ryan. Natasha Ryan is Amy Lutz. Casey Martell is Greg Lutz. Mino Pelucci as Matt Lutz. Michael Sachs is Jeff. Helen Shaver is Carolyn. Val Avery is Sergeant Gianfrido. And Irene Daly is Aunt Helena.
And that nice cameo at the beginning, who paid the coroner?
Yes, is the bald-headed...
Top Gun. Okay, you can do Top Gun, but I was thinking more of
Back to the Future. He's the principal.
He is the principal, and I'm drawing a blank on the gentleman's name.
Principal Strickland.
He was only in there for a second.
Yes,
so
he was.
He was,
but I think he did say the word slacker.
But I did notice it.
Yeah. So
I think he was saying the people that came out of that house
slackers.
Were slackers.
Yeah. So
yeah.
All right. So this is going to be fun. I know we've all looked at some of the reviews on this one, and they're not pretty. So
it's not a pretty sight.
It's not.
The Rotten Tomatoes score is a certified splat with 31% for the critics.
That breaks my heart. That really does break my heart. And the audience score isn't much better, is it?
And the audience score is a 52%.
Oh,
a little bit above 50%.
Oh, it hurts.
I'll start with the positive because I could only find one real positive review, and it's from the staff of Variety. I guess the staff liked the movie.
The whole staff.
whenever
they can't figure out a movie, they just say the staff.
Staff,
right?
Yeah. It's definitely a house that audiences will enjoy visiting, especially if unfamiliar with the ending.
That's it?
I don't even know.
That's the review?
Yeah, that's the review.
I found a better review.
I don't even know how to clarify.
You know what the better review is?
Did a staff member give out like a letter?
Yeah.
No, the better review is the bank that financed a movie because they're laughing all the way to it.
Oh, yeah, definitely.
That is the worst positive review I have ever heard. That's almost like saying it's a movie, it has actors,
yeah,
and it's on film.
And the staff had to come up with it. That's what's the fun part of it.
Oh, yeah. So the negative critics, let's go with our three here. We have three heavy hitters. We have Casey Summers from the Washington Post. They said, the Amityville Horror is a horror. What is supposed to be the true story of a young couple driven from their dream house by demons turns out to be nothing more than a ripoff and a tedious one at that. Dave Kerr from the Chicago Reader. The Amityville Horror begins with the promising premise of a haunted house in the suburbs and quickly degenerates into a display of pretentious camera angles. And then Roger Ebert from the Chicago Sun-Times. We watch 2 hours of people being frightened and dismayed, and we ask ourselves, what for? If it's real, let it have happened to them. Too bad, Lutzes. If it's made up, make it more entertaining.
Wow.
If they can't make up their minds, why should we?
Kill them. I don't care. He probably actually wanted actual murders in the movie.
It's not a pretty sight. It was a bloodbath, and there were more negative reviews. There was one that just tore the acting, especially Rod Steiger, apart.
You're just being just kind
right
now.
Completely obliterated poor Rod Steiger.
First time we saw this movie, Ken?
I saw it on cable.
What a shock.
I would say, I would say early 80s as a very young kid, probably around 9-10 years of age. This movie did scare the crap out of me, but then again, I was 9-10 years of age and also thought that this was real because of all the hype that surrounded the movie. And being a 10-year-old who thinks this is real, yeah, really good marketing on that.
Ted?
Yeah, there's no surprises. In college, it was a movie that I had not seen. And like Ken, in college, we went and saw the Blair Witch Project. We'll probably bring that up again when we're talking about the marketing of this movie. And so I started to go looking for true horror movies. Of course, this was one that my dad had always talked about. I watched it when I was in college. It was okay, but it's lost something in the years since.
It's lost that love and feeling. That's so sad.
Yep.
And it's gone.
Hey, shameless plug. We did review Blair Witch Project. It's out there. Tune in. I think you'll like it. For me, high school, rented this bad boy on VHS. And I got to admit, when I first saw this thing in high school, I was scared. Yes, there were some jumpy scenes, but I was borderline obsessed with the Amityville story and the Amityville movie. And I was drawn to this. And then I made the mistake of watching the sequels, which is a whole other podcast. But we're going to focus on this
one
here.
Oh, dear Lord in heaven.
Yes, we're going to focus on this one. So pretty much we all saw this one in our normal wheelhouse of movie watching. All right, Ken, give us the plot on this one.
Okay, so right off the bat, this is, of course, based on real life events. So back in November 13th of 1974, Ronald DeFeo Jr. murders his entire family with a rifle. So then a year later, the Lutzes move in, George and Kathy, along with their children. They're not bothered by the murders that happened a year before because, well, the price of the house is $80,000, which is a steal. Granted, they don't really have the money for it at that time, but they decide to go forward with it anyway. Fast forward, we have Father Delaney come in to bless the home. Of course, he knocks on the door. Nobody answers. And just like any normal person, decides just to walk in and go upstairs and just try to bless the house, but then notices there's some flies there. Flies get to him. He gets sick and then has to leave. And then Kathy has an aunt who's a nun, visits the house, and also becomes violently ill. And she also has to leave. George becomes volatile, abusive. He obsesses over how cold the house is. And I don't know how many trees he had around the house, but a portion of this movie is dedicated to chopping wood. So George, every night, wakes up around 3:15, which supposedly is the time where those murders happened a year previously. And now Kathy's having nightmares. The house is stealing $1,500 of cash. Babysitter gets locked into a closet. Just strange things happening in the house so far. The phone never works either because there's always static when she tries to call the priest. So George's land survey job is starting to suffer because of his lack of attendance and concentration problems and the fact that he likes to chop wood.
How did you know that it was a land survey business?
Because it's on the side of his van.
I've watched it twice.
No, it's on the side of the van. It's Lutz Surveyors.
Yeah. In fact, his partner, you know, comes out to see him, and you know, right. we all want to see his partner get it with the axe, but that doesn't happen.
or his wife.
Later on, they
I want
go
his wife to take it.
His partner and his partner's girlfriend, a wife, they find out that this house has some, you know, bad vibes going on, and they go back to the house to find out that there's something in the basement. They break into the wall, and then Mr. Lutz here sees a reflection of himself, and his partner's wife starts talking in his voice, but nobody leaves. They stay the night, and then just freaky things happen. Kathy looks like she ages automatically and then goes back to normal, and he looks like he's getting ready to kill the kids with an axe, but then everything's fine, and they try to get out of the house, and he falls into the basement full of blood, and then...
That was tar.
Was it black tar or blood?
No,
I thought it was red.
It was
so.
The same substance that was in the toilets when they flushed it.
Oh.
It was, does it really matter?
It really doesn't, no, but it was interesting that he fell into a vat of tar, which I...
Fell into a vat of something.
Yes,
something, yeah.
Mayonnaise.
Probably yes. their shit.
Yeah, it probably was.
But they get out of the house, and then they drive away, and basically, that's the end of the movie.
Well, he goes back for Cujo, so...
Well, yeah, I mean, that's what I mean. He went back and saved the dog. Mm-hmm. And well, the dog saved him, mm-hmm. pulled him out of
yeah,
there. So.
Yeah, because the dog's
but that's
that
basically
strength.
The plot. Hang in there, you know, because you got money invested into a house. You don't want to leave.
But they were only there 18 days.
28 days.
Oh, 28
days.
So
they were there. They were there just under
See,
a month.
I was confused about that too, Ted. I felt like they weren't there the whole 28 days.
The movie took a lot of liberties. We know the book is completely
the
full
book
of shit.
Took a lot of
we
the
know.
Liberties.
Liberty, liberty, liberty.
I mean, the book is really, and I'm being very generous when I say it's full of shit because it is. There are a lot of liberties in that book, and the movie has a lot of liberties.
Let's talk about the movie first, and then we'll
talk about Mr. Anson.
I have a feeling the majority of the second half of this podcast is going to be just dissecting the true story about how full of absolute garbage these people were.
That's going to be the whole debate, is we're going to lay out not necessarily the facts, but we're going to lay out some information. We're going to debate it. We're going to have a little fun with it. You make the call. We assume if you are listening to this podcast now, you have seen this movie, and we're not talking the remake with Ryan Reynolds. We're talking the original.
By the way, the coroner, James Tolkien.
Tolkien, that's right. James Tolkien. Thank
yes.
you.
Yes.
Now,
J.R.R.
now I can
Tolkien?
Sleep at night.
No, not that
Lord
Tolkien.
Of the Rings?
No, not J.R.R.
No, but
Tolkien.
That's coming up next month.
Oh, look at that. Sneak
that's
peek.
That's
a plug there.
Sneak peek. Yeah.
There's 16 hours of my life I'm never going to get back
That's
again.
That's my line. Why are you stealing my lines? You like those movies.
It's 4 hours of people of things walking.
16 hours of people with bad teeth and bad accents wandering around looking for a ring.
Well, here we go.
Here we go.
Here's the thing with this movie. As it starts, I mean, what is disturbing? Well, first we hear that little musical ensemble with the
girls
singing.
Oh, dear God.
Which Ted doesn't care for. I actually kind of like it.
It is one of the most annoying soundtracks.
Is it up there with Tootsie?
Or scores.
Tootsie
it
Go?
It is right there.
The
with
Firm? The Firm?
It's right there with The Firm and Tootsie.
Huh?
Holy crap. They don't even disguise the fact that when you hear the doo-doo-doo and you hear the little girl singing, it's something creepy supposed to happen. It's like, come on, guys. It's like, I don't know.
All right.
It's
well,
so annoying.
The movie kicks off with a fact. The fact is that the DeFeo family was murdered in 1974, right. Six of the family members were killed. That is the one fact that we cannot debate. The rest of it is up for discussion.
It's very disturbing.
It is disturbing.
Just because you're watching a reenactment of what happened in that house. And they use that for the first part of the film, going back and forth of where those kids and where the mom and dad were killed. Very hard to watch that beginning. Sometimes when I look at these type of movies, when people are making money off of an event that was so tragic, being all murdered in their sleep, or were they? I mean,
yes.
They.
Yes. No, they were.
No. Okay, let's open the box here. Let's think about this for a minute. All right. So you have a family that is sleeping. It has been proven they were not drugged. So he is using a Marlin shotgun, or someone is using a Marlin
right.
shotgun. Anyone who has fired any type of rifle knows the recourse and the sound of a gunshot going through a barrel in a chamber is loud. Now, that's outside. You amplify that inside, and it is extremely loud. Here are my holes, all right? every family member, this is all documented, this is also fact, they were murdered, they were all face down in the bed, and they were shocked. They were not moved, they did not try to struggle. So, actually, what are we talking? 8 shots. 2 for the mom, 2 for the father, and then the kids get 1 each. So you fire off 2 into the dad, 2 in the mom, and you're telling me that that doesn't wake anyone up. That's a little odd. Could there have been
extremely odd
another person there holding them down, telling them not to move or you're going to get it? There are many, many, many stories out there. Some people say that the sister and DeFeo Jr. planned to kill the father, and that the sister went a little apeshit and killed more people than she should have, and then DeFeo took her out. There is a weird parapsychologist out there. I can't think of his name. Just for a little disclosure, I'm really into parapsychology. But there is a parapsychologist out there who states that in instances where there is a good sense of evil or a sense of power in that house, that the sound waves can be muffled or disguised. I know, right? I know. It seems really far-fetched. That was his theory. And I'm like, really?
Yeah.
Okay.
I actually think your brother actually said that that's how it happened later on. Of course, initially he said gangsters basically told him.
Butch DeFeo, Ron DeFeo Jr. is known alcoholic, gambler, heroin, horrible relationship with his father, couldn't hold a job, mentally probably not all there. God only knows. That guy changed his story like 15 times.
Right.
And we know he recently died in jail. 2021.
It changed every time they could. Every time they could make money off of it.
Yes.
Yeah. Every time it was like a documentary.
Yes. And that we'll obviously go into that later. But just starting with the beginning of the movie. Okay, you've got the tragic sounds and the images, which I thought was done very well with the kind
of
quick action.
It's definitely done.
The quick action scenes. I like the way it opened. Sorry, Ted. The music doesn't bug me like it bugs you, but. I liked the beginning of the music.
I like the way it opens as well. It opens with what actually happened. And the way it's shot is really well done. And it sets you up to actually get into a movie. And I understand what you're saying kind of about, you know, using a tragedy to
make money,
to sell a movie or make money. And I don't have nearly as big a problem with it, because if you look at what we do as podcasters, we don't do a true crime podcast.
We don't make money.
But true crime, right. And we don't make money.
Unless you guys want to give us some.
Yeah, right. And, it probably costs us money.
True crime is a huge deal. You know, I would feel a lot more icky about this and about these people if they didn't make up an additional tragedy that caused Jay Anson to write the book for them. There's so many things that I can't get past to feel bad about the DeMeo family. Here again, it's a tragedy what happened to them. Yeah, they all got shot.
I just think of those little kids, you know, those innocent kids, and here I am getting ready to watch a movie about, granted, it's about the Lutzes. It's not really about them. But the beginning of it just makes me just a little uneasy that I'm
No, but it's nothing different than watching a Dateline or a 2020 or a, you know,
when you're one of those
true crime things. It's absolutely right. It happens.
It's a horror movie. It's supposed to make you uncomfortable. And the setup does. It's everything that follows that just doesn't live up to it.
The other movies that we review are other horror movies that are based on some true events, like we just did the Texas Chainsaw Massacre. You take little bits and pieces here from other areas and you combine it into a movie. This is the first movie that I at least am aware of where you take a true life event, a true murder like this, and you weave it into another horror film. I think there might have been ones before this, but I think this is like the big one that really starts it all. It's not like we have a fictional family that gets murdered. They're actually using real names and real people, and it's
just different.
Except for
the kids. The kids' names are all changed.
Okay. Did not know that, but still, it's different. Like the Texas Chainsaw Massacre, we're led to believe that it was real, but the events weren't real exactly. They took some bits and pieces and made it into a movie. This, you're going right into this movie knowing that these things happened.
So the Texas Chainsaw Massacre, I mean, all right. Yeah, it's based on loose events. But if you're doing apples to apples when it comes to something that is actually believable, The Texas Chainsaw Massacre is not remotely believable that there's some asshole walking around with a mask on and a chainsaw chopping up people at random in rural Texas. Sorry, that's just way the hell out there. Think about this. It comes off the headlines of a 74 murder, 75 trial. This is pre-internet, obviously. So people are believing what they're reading in the headlines, the New York Post, the Times, the papers. And in New York City and Long Island, this is hot. This is way up there, all right? So then you get the book out.
It was a trial of the century.
Oh,
wasn't
at the time. Oh, absolutely. I mean, it was out there. And the Lutzes, they were all over the media. They were on all the morning talk shows. Yeah. They were everywhere. And then, you know, you sell the movie rights and you get this movie out. And the movie, I mean, it says it right on the cover. Based on
actual events.
Yeah. It doesn't say based on true events. It's like this happened and people went to the theater and they ate it up. And the Lutzes, whether, you know, you agree that it's fabricated or there's a little bit of truth to it or what, I mean, it's out there. We could talk about the Warrens coming in. There's just
because they're not even in the movie.
Right, and they should be. I mean, it's so much great stuff.
Oh, yeah, definitely. Which I'll say right now, I pray that James Wan doesn't use Amityville in the Conjuring universe that he's created from the Warrens. Because
that's true. I didn't think about that.
They did The Conjuring, which was based off of the farmhouse in Connecticut. And then they
Conjuring
did
two,
the Enfield
Electric
Poltergeist.
Boogaloo. Yeah.
And then they did the other trial that was the first time that possession and demonic possession had been brought up in a legal setting.
Johnny Depp and Amber Heard?
That was the third.
Did you say
Conjuring
Amber Heard?
And of course.
Johnny Depp and Amber Heard, yeah.
Total demonic possession.
And all three of those movies, even though we're not going to even talk about the Enfield Poltergeist, which they play a big part in this. The fact that they're not in the movie, they brought a lot of attention.
They also brought, in my opinion, a little bit of legitimacy to the argument.
Yes.
That's the thing.
That's the other thing, because up until the last 25 years, Ed Warren was a leading demonologist. I mean, when Geraldo or... When
Sally Jesse
or Phil Donahue, or any of the any of the talk shows, Oprah too, when they would have something concerning some one of these cases, they would bring the Warrens on. They brought a level of legitimacy to what these people were saying. It actually hurts their credibility a little bit. I'm not going to tip my hand a whole lot, but I tend to believe the Warrens probably a little bit more than I disagree with them.
Yeah, no, you're not just tipping your hat. I agree with you. They give a lot of legitimacy, and they should have been in the movie. I can only imagine who would have played them.
So when did the Warrens visit the house? When did the Warrens come into the house? Was it after they left? Was it during when they were there?
It was while they were there. They called them.
Yeah, they called some other whack job who played kind of messed with their heads a little bit. But then the Warrens came in. And the Warrens brought a TV crew. And they brought a whole bunch of other parapsychologists in, too. It would have added that to the movie. I think that would have been a little bit more of a... Not necessarily given it more legitimacy, but I think it would have given it a different element. And maybe the Warrens didn't want to be portrayed in it. Yeah. Yes.
Well, they took a lot of backlash.
Oh, they always do. I know that. Yeah.
They took an extreme amount of backlash for the Amityville stuff.
So what do you guys think of the cast? So we're kicking off, you know, we got the shootings. Then we're going to the realtor scene where they're looking at the house. What do you guys think of James Brolin being cast as George Lutz?
I like James Brolin. I think he's a really good actor. I like his son a lot. I like his son in almost everything he's done.
Oh, Josh Brolin.
Yeah. And he's really good as well. Yeah.
Goonies.
And I. Nice. Wow.
Shameless plug.
But no, he's really good. And, you know, Margot Kidder comes off of Superman, which was an amazing success. And I'm going to say she's hot. She's hot. But she's beautiful, but she's also a hot actress. She's a leading lady. right now.
Oh, yeah. And,
but then you add the level of Rod Steiger. He is the one that adds the level of legitimacy as far as the acting goes. This is a guy who acted alongside Sidney Poitier. You know, this is a guy who has been nominated for Academy Awards. But
not his best role, though.
Yeah. So what happened here?
See, this is a case where you don't know where the director wanted something particular from him or if it's his interpretation. And that's a gray area, and it's too bad because this is definitely not his finest hour.
And the last scenes that we see him in where he's blind and
is very over the top.
Very over. Well,
yeah, even at the church asking God to help these people, it's big overacting big time at that moment. And throughout the whole film, I think his character is just poorly written. First, he goes into a house, like I said earlier during the plot. Nobody answers, and he just goes on in and just walks upstairs and just does his thing.
See, this is another thing where the writing really lets everybody down. When Margot Kidder tries to call him, she's like, he's a family friend.
Yeah, yeah.
Right.
So, but it's never established that he's a friend. He's like the parish priest. It makes it even weirder that this stranger walks into their house.
He's like knocking on the door going, Mrs. Lutz, Mrs. Lutz. He's like, Kathy.
No, he is saying Kathy. Right. He's obviously
and he's invited.
The parish
he
priest.
Was obviously invited to bless the home.
But when they go out on the boat, because I'm watching it as we're discussing, when they go out on the boat, they're wearing different clothes. They would have had to have come into the house to get their jackets.
Oh, Hollywood error.
They didn't hear him?
It's also December, and they're boating.
Right.
Not going to happen, guys.
No,
not in Long Island
New York.
Sound in December. No.
If he's coming to bless the house and she knows about it, you're going to leave the house? I would think if you're friends with him, you want to greet your priest and have a talk with him, not just get on a boat and leave. Because then later on, she's like, he never showed up. Wait a second.
You left the house. You bailed on the poor guy.
It's inconsistent.
The weather is very inconsistent with the movie. That's one of my huge pet peeves.
This feels more like October than it does December, January.
It is not December. Because the movie takes place from the time they bought it in December to, I think, mid to late January is when they bailed on the house. It's very inconsistent with the weather. I've actually seen this house in person.
Oh, yeah?
In 2000, I was in Long Island, and my goal was to go out and see that. They changed the address, as you know.
Right.
They changed the windows.
Oh, yeah. It looks absolutely nothing like the house. I saw this house 23 years ago in 2000. I'm sure it's changed since then, but the windows, the siding.
They got rid of the pool.
I literally just walked by the house, and there were people there.
That was a heated pool, and they got rid of it.
There were people taking photos. I mean, the owners of these houses hate the tourists going by and stuff.
Oh, they hate them.
Hate them with a passion.
They absolutely they hate them.
But I'm like, screw it. I'm here. I'm going. And I just wanted
to. Eric's got a drone now. Yeah. He's going to take his drone
next time. I'm
flying
the drone up over the.
Fly around it.
Oh, yeah. I mean, I didn't get like some, you know, supernatural feel or anything, you know, or hear voices or anything. For me, who was kind of obsessed with Amityville and in high school and after high school, it was one of the things that I wanted to do.
Of course.
And since I'm in the area, I'm like, you know what the hell, let's do it.
Yeah.
So.
Hell yeah. I mean, I would.
I didn't take a photo, though. It's before cell phones and stuff, so.
The other part of this, too, where writing really hurts us is they can't find a narrative. Is it the DeMeos? Are they haunting the house? Or is it this guy from the Salem witch trials?
Or the Indian chief that's buried under the house.
That looks just like George Lutz, amazingly enough.
Well, so does Butch DeFeo, too. Everyone looks like George Lutz.
Well, 2005's version of this movie would tell you that it was the family that got killed. But in this movie, it's everything. It's a possessed house for whatever reason. Something bad happened that was buried in that basement down below.
That's the Salem witch trial guy.
Which, I mean, that was a disappointment. You know, they opened it up
painted
and it's like this.
Red.
Oh, hell yeah.
Painted red. And you see this little apparition that looks just like the guy next to you.
A hologram,
which was actually James
Brolin.
It's Brolin's brother.
I think he's the only one who saw it. Did the other people really even see it?
The wife did.
Well, she was
because
nuts.
She's supposed to be a sensitive.
Very hyper, but, hypersensitive too.
Well, the weird thing was, you know, we don't even see them, his friend, his coworker, and his wife. We don't even see them after that. Where did they go? I mean, they just automatically disappear. Like, so when we were talking about the Warrens earlier, I was wondering if they were kind of like the Warrens for this. It's like you have all this buildup and it never pays off in any of this stuff.
Ed and Lorraine, too, they took artifacts from almost every one of the things that they investigated.
They got that museum in Connecticut.
Yeah. It's closed, unfortunately, right now.
No, they're dead.
But I'm watching the movie. There's one piece of pottery that keeps popping up throughout the movie, and it's of that evil dragon. It looks like Pazuzu.
Right.
From The Exorcist.
I was thinking the same thing when I was watching it, yep.
You know, how easy would it have been that they brought in a possessed item?
It's another caveat. Why not?
They can't pick a lane as to what is actually going on. They don't mesh. There's no meshing of the reasons.
Yeah.
It's inconsistent writing.
Is it the house or is it a devil or what is it? Because you get Father Delaney, he leaves and he gets sick. And every time he tries to call and warn them, he gets violently ill. And then later on, he goes blind. What's up with his protege? Was it Father Bolin? I think it was name was. Is he in on this with the house? I mean, he's doing everything he can.
Well, he starts on board with him and then he turns on him.
He doesn't defend him.
For no reason.
He doesn't defend him.
Right.
Yeah. He doesn't tell Father Delaney that Kathy Lutz stopped by, to see him. He lies and says that he's on vacation. He knows where exactly
he
is.
Exactly where
he
is.
Says,
yeah.
I'm,
and then he goes see his
friend.
Yeah.
And then you get this detective. What the fuck with the detective? Okay. There's no payoff. He sits in his car in front of the house the
smoking
whole time.
Cigars.
And
he's
just looking at, oh, that looks kind of weird, what they're doing in the house. And then he goes, follows the father, but he doesn't follow up on anything. What was the purpose of the detective? I almost don't even think he should even be around. It just didn't make any sense that the detective kept, that you kept the detective after the door broke off. There was just no point. There's no payoff.
He's a lost character.
He is.
Yeah. You throw things in here and you don't know what you're going to do with them. And you throw characters in here that never even happened. The babysitter never happened. She gets locked in the closet and all of a sudden you see blood on the
door. It's such a weak scene.
It would have taken hours for her to break her skin knocking on
such
the door.
It's such a weak scene too. I mean, I would have wanted to see like a demon in there when that light went out or something, something that really freaked her out. Something.
We scared.
Yeah.
You thought she died or something when she had that violent scream at the end. And then we find out that she's still in there and she's okay.
And the kid's a brat for not opening the door.
Jody would have kicked her ass.
Jody told her. Yeah.
Jody the pig.
Jody the pig.
Yeah. So. Who the fuck is Jody?
Jody's nice. Oh, she's sweet and all this. But we find out later that Jody's
the
pick. We've seen movies where a girl has a relationship with a ghost or an entity in the house. This doesn't have any type of buildup or payoff in it. We get a little rocking chair that goes back and forth. And then when Margot Kidder comes upstairs and sees the eyes, I guess they're the pig eyes.
I know.
That was the most stupidest thing I think I've ever seen in a horror movie. For a movie like this that has the stars that they have,
here's the thing. If you think about it, you're right. The writing is so weak in this movie. They literally jumped on they could have put anything up there and slapped Amityville on it and it would have made $80 million. It is.
That's kind of what it feels like
regret.
They did.
Some of the stuff, it's 1979. I get it. It's like Texas Chainsaw for 74. Some of the stuff is so campy, you have to take it for face value of the era. But even in the era, it's just so campy. It's like, seriously? I mean, I like the voices. I like the Get Out voices. That freaked me out. That's still, when I watched it again today, I still had the hairs on my body raised on the second Get Out. It's still kind of like, ooh, But the lights, it's like, wow, what are those flashlights? What the hell is that? It's just some campy stuff.
When I think of the Get Out, I think of Talladega Nights, and I think of when Cal is sitting on there, and he's sitting in the home of his partner house. He's now married to his wife, and he's sitting there, and the house goes, "Get out!" Because now it becomes a parody. Yeah. And every time we hear the word "Get Out," it's parodied.
Get Out reminds me of a much better movie, Get Out, by Jordan Peele.
The effects here are bad. The writing's bad. The acting is subpar. I'm going to go with an Eric Line, hardcore nudity,
which we came close to.
We came close.
They were playing with us. They were like, "Yeah, this might happen. This
definitely
might happen."
That PG. Right. No, it's R. Is this R? It's R.
Yeah.
R. I think this is R. But the 4K version with AI, we're probably going to see the full breast.
Nice. Now we're 12 years old. Nice job, Ken. Beautiful.
Right.
Nudity. But yes, you're right. And let's build on that. The lovemaking scene was pathetically weak. That music was
annoying. Remind me of 3 Days of the Condor.
It was 3 Days of the Condor. God. Yes.
Why did the house give him ED?
Wah, wah, wah. It steals $1,500 and ED. It's right. Yeah. It doesn't happen to me. Well, it did.
It doesn't happen to me. Well, I guess it did. I guess the house gave you ED.
And she's sitting there smoking a cigarette I forgot about that scene. You're right. This house has a vendetta.
In my childhood room, I had those mirrors with the gold.
Oh, yeah, with that gold, like, that gold inlay built into it. Yes.
Yeah.
That is of the era. Like when the kid walks in. You know, after they're doing it, and she gets up, she like magically has a robe on too. It's like
Right, exactly.
You know, we're talking about 70s horror. Talked about last episode about the Texas Chainsaw Massacre and how it changed a lot of things. This did not hop on the bandwagon. The person who bought the rights to the book wanted to make this a CBS TV movie of the week.
Yeah.
It does have that kind of feel to it.
You know what it's like? It's like Salem's Lot.
Exactly. You can almost feel.
Sucks.
You can almost feel where the commercials would be.
Yes, you're right.
And the fact that it happens at 3:15, we talked about this when we did the Exorcism of Emily Rose last year. The 3:00 is the witching hour.
Shameless plug.
Because it's the opposite time of when Jesus died on the cross. And so 3:00 in the morning is considered the witching hour.
This house wants to be different. It wants to be 3:15.
Right, because that's when DeFeo killed.
Allegedly.
That's when he killed his family. But he also claimed to hear voices as well. It's using tropes, and it's not using them particularly well.
Originally, Jay Anson, who is the writer of the book, right? He wrote the screenplay for this. And the studio said, no way. Interesting fact, though, I think the first screenplay of this movie was given to three people. I mean, this is lore, I guess you could say. And three of these people all got into accidents, and one was fatal.
All right, so calm down. So this was this was a ploy by the studio when they knew they were going to release this as a movie.
Mm-hmm.
They had seen the success that The Exorcist had about stuff that went on set. They actively made up stuff that happened on set.
Never happened, is what we're saying.
Exactly. All of it has been refuted. All of it's been disproven. Even Brolin and Kidder both have said nothing happened on set. Nothing happened to anybody who read the script. It was all part of the marketing campaign. Because they had seen the success of The Exorcist, which we all know that William Friedkin was the actual
horror
person. Or
The Omen, because The Omen had some weird crap that happened.
Exactly.
You know, they probably used that even to that point. So I'm looking at the accolades here, and it's funny that you hated the score here, and it got nominated for an Academy Award for Best Original Score.
That's an abomination.
And a Golden Globe.
That's disgusting. That's an insult.
I guess back in the day they called it the Stinkers Bad Movie Awards, and I guess it got nominated for Worst Picture, Worst Director, Worst Actor, Worst Actress, and Worst Supporting Actor.
Would that be a precursor to the Razzies?
The Razzies.
That's what I'm thinking. Not only did Score get nominated for a Academy Award, got nominated for a Golden Globe and a Saturn Award. But then the Saturn Awards also nominated Margot Kidder for Best Actress. This is all over the freaking place, this movie.
Did you read where this movie opened?
Yeah, at the Museum of Science
Museum
of Art.
Of Modern Art in New York. How about
Modern
that?
Art in New York.
How about that, huh?
That was a dark day for
it's
them.
It's marketing. This whole movie is built on marketing. Everything is marketing.
And that's what we were saying. They made up stuff that happened on set.
Yeah.
Just fictionalized stuff.
Liberties, just liberties.
Liberties after liberties were taken with this.
Liberty.
Why does nobody in a horror movie listen to the dog? The dog figures all this shit out.
Again, another movie where the dog is my favorite character. He saved somebody. Which is completely ridiculous.
He had enough sleeve and pull him out. Right. Okay.
Exactly.
Okay.
Yes. Margot Kidder said in a 2009 interview, this movie was a piece of shit.
She actually. After she went a little off the rails, honesty started coming out, and she's like, and she and apparently everyone in Rod Steiger did not get along very well on this set either.
Because he took it seriously.
He actually took it seriously. Yes.
Well, he's a serious actor.
Yeah.
And see, this is where you have your conflict between, is it directing? Is it the actor? Is it the writing? Where is the disconnect? The director is supposedly was brought on because he was a known director.
Was he?
Yeah, I guess so. That's what I had read.
Uh-huh.
The writing here is what totally torpedoes this movie. I know, Eric, you said you're into parapsychology. If we're talking about an actual possession, it starts as oppression, and that takes time. George Lutz would not, 2 days into having been there, start having oppressive things happen to him. If you believe it, it's something that takes time. This is where the book that claims to be real starts to lose. They didn't do their due diligence.
And the other thing that's is that Lutz backed this book too.
Oh yeah, no, they backed it full. They went on that hill and they died on that hill.
That they did.
Most of the book they said was accurate. There were some liberties taken that they were okay with. Just a really quick note on the director here. He directed Cool Hand Luke and The Drowning Pool. So there's a couple of movies right there.
And Brewbaker a year later. And Pulp of Greenwich Village.
So, I mean, you have to look at that and go, okay, well, maybe not the director. He's essentially trying to make chicken salad out of chicken shit.
I think what a lot of it was the film house is like, look, you make this movie over the top because this is what the people want to see. We want this thing to be like a media frenzy.
I think you guys hit the nail on the head earlier when you guys talked about it being a TV movie, because it has a lot of that TV movie feel to it and some of that TV movie horror. I mean, not scary horror stuff. I mean, we talked about the eyes in the window.
That's TV.
That's very TV-ish. We see the pig in the window later on. Very TV-ish. Here's the horror. Oh, I'm driving my car and my steering wheel is locked. Oh, no, and the hood just opened up. Oh, this is so scary.
Well, that's just a typical American car. That's not typical American car.
But I think you guys,
Was it a Corvair?
No, it's a Chevy Nova.
I know.
Chevy Nogo and an Omega.
I was going with Corvair because of Ralph Nader. When you look at other movies that have been done since this movie, the best one that I can come up with is The Conjuring. The Conjuring is actually scary. It is truly a frightening movie. This falls so far short of The Conjuring. Why does he steal a book from the library?
Yeah, I was wondering the same thing. Why don't you just get a library card? I mean, it'd be a few minutes and you're good to go. Those type of things make sense. But when you're bringing up like movies like The Conjuring, they have had years to learn from movies like this, their mistakes. We don't see possession houses often up until this point. So this is kind of like the Texas Chainsaw Massacre bringing the slasher films in. This one is bringing in the house possession. I mean, we get 5 years later, we get Poltergeist. So this movie actually sets us up for further movies like this that learn to do it better.
Actually, like Poltergeist 3 years later, better. Poltergeist is 82.
After that, we get the best, though, which is House. Ding dong, you're dead. If we get into the true story here, there's a lot of theories as to why the DeFeos were killed or how they were killed. We mentioned one. Another one that I had read was that it was a mob hit.
Which I don't believe at all.
You look at the last name.
Okay. And it's, yes, it, that was thrown out there, the Italian stereotype. I mean, I get it.
Yeah.
And he owned a car lot. Yes, I get it. Yes. Right.
And it was the 70s.
So yeah, of course. Right. Everyone's in the mob. Yeah.
I don't know if it was Jay Anson who wrote the book or one of his colleagues.
He claims he wrote it.
That they wrote the book after a night of sitting and having a lot of wine. To proclaim this as a true story, it's almost fraud.
It is, but it's marketing. It's literally hook, line, and sink.
Yeah.
You're right, it is fraud.
But the writer basically said the reason why he wrote this book wasn't because of the Lutz's testimony. It was actually Father Delaney's testimony. He is the reason why he wrote this book.
Father Delaney is the fly in the ointment. As
no
far
pun intended.
If you're looking right. If somebody's trying to hitch their wagon that this is real, what motivation does he have to lie? That's the one thing. Everybody who's lived in the house since has said that nothing has happened.
Never. Ken, you said it just recently sold, right? In January?
Yeah, yeah. In January for, I think, $1.2 million or
which
something like that.
Which is market value for the area, of course. But yeah, no one has ever said anything about anything else except the Lutzes.
The Lutzes have said that the evil came with them, that for years after they left the house that they were still dealing with that evil.
They've changed their story as well. Do you remember when Oprah had the guy on, what was it? He wrote the book. It was supposed to be his life story, but he ended up fictionalizing the entire thing, and the guy was like raked across the coals.
I don't.
It was her book of the month selection.
Oh.
And
so all the sheep bought it and read it.
His reputation was shot. You know, the Lutzes came out of this smelling pretty okay. They don't really get enough junk as far as how far they've made this.
They
stuff
were
up.
Angry because they only got $200,000, and everyone else ran out like a bandit with the money. They claim they only get 200.
Oh, yeah.
When you think of the big picture, they buy the house. He has a successful company. They're newlyweds. Yes, the house is much more, I think, than they can afford. So the argument is that they come up with this elaborate scheme, if you will, after talking with people like DeFeo's defense attorney and a few other people. And there's a bunch of arguments about scripts being thrown around and contracts and stuff where they're thinking to themselves, we can come out of this profitable, but we have to sacrifice everything. That's abandoning the house, abandoning everything, and never, ever going back there. Now, if that backfires on them, you're screwed. That's a huge risk.
Mm-hmm.
So you got to ask yourself, is that something that you think these people would fabricate? Where they made promises that, yes, you will be taken care of. You just need to play the game. I don't know.
Yeah, I think that they were made promises and they didn't put it in a contract.
But who would they make the promises with? Who's going to be able to back them if it goes sour?
Well, you start with Jay Anson and the people who published the book. Because the book came
royalty
first.
Royalty deals, of course.
So you start there.
TV rights,
and
movie
then you
rights.
TV rights,
residuals,
movie rights.
Action yep. dolls.
So they would have to know the writer before they even bought the house.
They did.
So they did know him.
Yep.
It was a year. I think the house sat vacant for about a year, year and a half, I think.
And I was confused, too. Wasn't in the 70s? A real estate agent didn't have to disclose murders in the house at that time.
No,
they did
not. Why would she even bring certain parts?
Did she though in the movie? Did she mention the murders?
Yeah.
I don't remember. I don't remember her saying anything about the murders.
She did
the movie.
Not mention it, but they mentioned that she said it. So they when they were sitting down in the top room there against the fireplace, she's like, doesn't it freak you out that all these people died here? He's like, nah. That's why he's playing with the numbers.
The house has no memories.
I liked it when the realtor's sitting there working out the contract numbers and the papers start blowing. She's like, fuck this, I'm out of here. Oh.
So cheesy.
It is. It's definitely, the movie does have that, especially in hindsight, it definitely has that made-for-TV kind of Salem's Lot theme. It really does. We just need David Soul to play the best friend or the colleague there we were in.
I think the difference between something like Salem's Lot and this is just the, how far.
The writing?
The writing's just really bad. I mean,
one's like Stephen King and the other's not.
And it's funny because, you know, Stephen King talked about this movie. He said it was a parable on the financial anxieties of home ownership.
Yeah,
what the hell?
Yeah, he went really left field.
The house can do certain things, but it can't do other things. It can control a car miles away. It can control a sickness. It can make you blind. It can make the priest blind.
It can steal money.
That was probably the stupidest thing. That, you know, all of a sudden you're missing $1,500.
Oh, I like the ED thing. I completely forgot about like the ED that. Thing.
Erectile dysfunction, baby.
Make people look old all of a sudden and have skin diseases. And it's just all over the place. But for some reason, you just couldn't kill off the family. What did the house want to do? Did the house want to eventually kill them all? I guess
that's part of the writing.
It has no direction. Supposedly, Jody wanted the daughter to live there forever.
Forever.
Right. And it's like The Shining, forever and ever.
Shining, yeah.
But it goes in so many different directions. It doesn't concentrate on that. If it would have focused on Jody wanting to keep her by killing her, then go that direction. Stop going all in these different areas. And
if they had said that this took place over the course of a year and a half, because if you look at The Conjuring, the Perrin family, this didn't happen to them immediately. It's something that took over the family and the mom over a course of time. You know, and that's another case where the Warrens got involved. This happens all in 28 days. And everything that I've ever read about
possession.
Or anything like that, it's not something you go through the drive-thru to get. It takes time. And the Lutzes just don't have the time that's invested here.
There's just so many weird things. I mean, you got the guy that comes with the beer.
Right, where he disappears?
And then disappears?
Was he supposed to be a ghost?
Yeah.
Yeah, what the hell was up with that scene?
Was he a neighbor?
What is up with that? It made absolutely, and he's like sniffling all. It's like, what's up with that?
Right.
Yeah. It didn't even need to be there.
It's just a bad stitching job, a bad editing job throughout this whole movie. But my biggest problem with this movie, my biggest one, is he has his friend Jeff and his wife there, and they go ahead, they open up that basement, and they open that red room, and all of a sudden, they're gone. And they're staying the night. Even though they're freaked out, and they hear things, and they know there's something wrong with the house, they're getting a good night's sleep. She's having a bad dream about him killing his children with an axe and about ready to slice, you know, her down the middle with an axe. They just disappeared. It's like bad editing. And, you know, we said maybe we don't put this on the director, but you have to. I don't think anybody comes unscathed in this movie. Everybody has problems. Margot Kidder at times is decent in her role, but then there are other times where I feel like she's really overacting. And we already talked about Rod Steiger. You know, he's horrible. Again, I'm bringing it up again. The other father, why did he sell Father Delaney out?
Probably got pressure from the Archdiocese.
That's actually one of the accurate things in the movie is how...
Then show
there that. There was a period of time where the church denied all claims of demonic possession. And the 70s was one of those times. There was a lot going on in the church at the time. Vatican II had come on, and a lot of people thought that the Pope at the time that passed Vatican II was possessed because they changed so much. That's why they call Father Delaney a modernist. There is some truth to how the archdiocese would have responded. It's only in the past like 35, 40 years that the church has changed its stance on demonic possession again. And part of that was because their feet were held to the fire by a couple of ex-priests, one of them being Father Malachi Martin, who wrote the brilliant novel Hostage of the Devil. And there's a good documentary on Netflix about Malachi Martin.
Murray Hamilton plays Father Ryan. He's also the mayor from Jaws. Basically, it's the same character, but one's a priest and one's a mayor of a town.
Right.
They're both saying nothing to see here, nothing to see here. He's actually the most interesting guy, I think, in this whole movie. The way that he kind of like goes after Father Delaney. I mean, every time Father Delaney tries to say something about the church having his back and about Christ having his back and things of that nature, man, does he shoot him down. And it's pretty good. If there's a decent acting job here, it might be Murray Hamilton here for me.
One's Amity, one's Amityville, right? Right. Amity Island, Amityville.
The Lutzes, I have a hard time believing they only made $200,000.
That's what they claim, and no one has fought them on it.
That's what they claim. But they made so many appearances on Phil Donahue. Because I remember in the 80s, my mom would watch Phil Donahue.
But do you get paid for that, going on Donahue shows?
Not much.
I don't think you do.
Not a lot of money.
Yeah.
You do get money, but it's probably a couple grand.
Yeah, I think it's more the notoriety of being on those shows, the circuit, if you will. Well, think about it. 79, 200 grand is probably, what, 4 or 5, half a million now. Based on what the revenue of this movie made, it's pennies on the dollar.
But we don't know what they really made off of the movie and the book, per se. I mean, they may have not had any type of...
They didn't have any contractual agreements on either. I don't think they made anything on them. I think they signed their rights away, or sign them away for a very small amount.
Which makes you wonder, are they telling the truth? If they had an agreement.
It boils down to two things. Either the Lutzes are telling the truth, or they're lying. Did these things happen in the house, or did they not happen in the house? Did some things happen in the house? If we're talking about the Lutzes, we all know that the book and the movie did take liberties. But were there any supernatural activities that happened in this house? I mean, are the Lutzes full of shit? Do you think they bought the house and this is a money grab from the start after their finances, quote unquote, maybe went south because they bit off more than they can chew? Or was there some type of supernatural activity?
I think you hit the nail on the head with the first part of what you said. I think they got desperate. We had what was the trial of the century?
People putting the idea in their head.
And they said, there's money to be made here.
How would you like to be
part of
it? Look
at what just happened with The Exorcist. Yeah. So, and the marketing is very similar to The Exorcist.
If we're talking about the Lutzes, yay or nay, but then you throw in the legitimacy of the Warrens. The Warrens stated there was activity in this house. They never denied that fact. Now, whether or not it happened to the Lutz family, we don't know. But the Warrens, who you and I agree are legitimate people, vow that there was some type of activity in this house. There was bad vibes, if you will, in this house. So it's not like it was scot-free.
My wondering here is of the Warrens, are they trying to protect their reputation? At this point,
I don't see them being those type of people.
Would they have made money off of this themselves?
The Warrens were not really the money people.
No, they lived
very
a relatively simple life. Yeah,
they were not. If you've ever listened to any of the interviews of the Warrens, they were very into parapsychology and the occult and supernatural, and money was never their driver.
But when I listen to people like the Warrens, it's usually notoriety. Hey, if you got in this house and like, hey, this is possessed, people are going to be like, oh, the Warrens have a big case.
That's what the critics of the Warrens have claimed for years upon years upon years, is that they're just publicity hounds. I don't necessarily agree with that. I tend to believe a little bit of what the Perrin family, even though the one daughter of the Perrin family has kind of refuted what happened in The Conjuring. Actual ghost hunters have went out to that particular house and have gotten evidence.
Yeah, it's not an open and shut case. That's the thing. It really isn't.
The thing is that nobody else has lived in this house has claimed to see
anything.
Exactly. This house is clean.
I guess the thing would be residual memory. That would be determined based off of what the house is made out of. If the house is made out of wood, it's not going to be a conductor. If you have a structure that's made out of stone that has a high quartz content to the stone, because quartz is used in radios, it has a tendency to record things and replay them. And that's what some people see. And that's what they claim to happen. There's numerous stories. They're all over England as far as that goes. So we're taking them and saying that, okay, this house has memories of what happened to the DeFeos. I just don't know. I can't.
Yeah, it's not easy.
I can't buy it.
It's not.
How long was it between when the Lutzes left and then somebody else took over the house?
The house went into foreclosure. All the items were in the house that the Lutzes owned were sold at auction. I believe it was within a year that the house went on the market.
What they say is sometimes when bad things happen, it leaves bad energy in a house. And so I'm wondering, and I don't know how true that is. And by the way, if you want to check it out, there's a website that actually tells you about who died in your house and what did they die
of.
We were trying to check this out today earlier, but it's $11.99 to find out that kind of stuff. I had put my address in there and I'm like, do I really want to go there? And they're like $11.99. I'm like, that's why I'm not going there. They're not paying no $12.
All right, Ken, wrap us up here. What are your thoughts on truth or false when it comes to the Amityville case here?
You know, it's hard to know about what the final case is as far as what really happened. There might be some spookiness that might have actually happened.
What is your gut telling you?
I'm leaning on bullshit.
You're okay. So you're leaning towards fraud.
I don't think they had something ready to go to begin with. But I think once they left the house, they had to figure out a way to get out of the money they owed. And I think then they tried to get something going. I don't think it was like, I had this deal with the writer and all this was in the works. And because why even bother even live there then? It just didn't make sense. So yeah, I'm going to lean on bullshit, but not exactly the way that maybe Ted thinks.
I'll tell you what my gut tells me as I'm thinking of this. So they buy the house. They're in over their heads. I believe that there is some type of supernatural residual power, if you will, or something in this house. Not nearly to the point of what is in the movie and or the book, but just enough kind of let the Lutz family know that, yeah, you know what? This probably wasn't your best purchase. And I think they probably talked to people. You know, they're like, hey, you know, we just bought the house and, you know, they're in the neighborhood. And he's like, you know, hey, this and that happens. And they're like, oh, you know, I personally think that the I can't think of his name, that the defense attorney for Ron DeFeo Jr. had a lot to do with trying to make money off this. I really think he planted the seed in this. I think in the end, yeah, I really think that these people just say, you know what, we're done. Pay us some money. We'll get out of here. You make your movie. You have a good day. And I think they were probably promised a lot more. But you can't go on TV and say that, hey, Warner Brothers screwed me out of $5 million. You know, you can't go on TV and say that because then you blow all of your legitimacy on it. So we are all in agreement that the movie is not a truthful, accurate apparel of events. Yes?
Not an Academy Award winning film.
No. I'm not even talking about the writing or the acting. I'm talking about the actual events.
I don't want to talk about the writing
or the acting.
I'm done with
the events themselves.
I agree with Ken.
I think it leans more towards the bullshit meter of a bullshit.
The real story behind everything is more interesting than the movie.
Exactly. Yep. I actually like listening to the documentaries, and I like listening to all the people that were really just criticizing it or even defending it. I thought that was a lot more interesting. And then the backstory on the DeFeos is kind of cool too. All right, let's talk about our reviews of this movie here. This is going to be another interesting segue here. Ken, start us off on this one.
I hadn't seen this movie in a long time, and I had hopes that I was going to like this more than our previous film, Texas Chainsaw Massacre.
Did you have high hopes?
I had high hopes.
Like the sign out front?
Exactly, yeah. No pun intended.
I know, right?
Watching this movie, the more I watched it, the more bad it was, and more things just didn't make sense to me, and it was just driving me nuts. I didn't understand the power of this house being able to go across the town and blind this priest. I mean, there's just so much stupidity when it comes to this movie. I'm going to be short and sweet on this one. This is a D+. I'm never going to watch this ever again.
Oh,
like you guys have already said, the documentaries, I'll watch those again. But this movie, there's just no value here. It's a shitty movie. It's a D+.
Right, too. All right. Ted, can't wait to hear your thoughts on this one.
I've kind of tipped my hand. You know, I have a lot of problems with the movie. The movie doesn't live up to the hype. The Exorcist lived up to the hype that it brought. The Omen lived up to the hype that brought. And to a certain extent, so did the Blair Witch Project. But there's such a nuanced difference between based off of a true story and this is a true story. They went one step too far. It fails in writing. I don't want to condemn the actors or the director, but they have to take a little bit of criticism as well. The bottom line is the documentaries and the people arguing back and forth whether or not this actually happened to the Lutz family is infinitely more interesting than the movie. And that's sad because there could have been a good movie here.
Oh, the movie had so much potential.
It just falls so short. You know, I think Ken's D+, it might be a little harsh, but I'm in a similar situation. I can't give it anything higher than a C-. Is it a movie I'll watch again? Because I'm an idiot, I probably will.
What about your obsession with Margot Kidder?
I don't have an obsession with Margot Kidder.
Not anymore. Oh, wait, that's me. I'm sorry. Yeah.
There you go.
Superman couldn't save her from this film, so just letting
there
you know.
There is something about,
spin the world backwards,
about the movie that for just its cheese, back in the day, before everything was streaming, we have here in Chicago, like Svengoolie. This reminds me of a Svengoolie movie.
Oh, he's still here, man.
Yeah. So there will always be part of me that'll probably watch
it
again.
You know what I was thinking? Mystery Science Theater 3,000. MSK,
there's another
3
one.
Grand.
Exactly.
The bots would rip this movie to shreds.
So I'm going to go with the C-. Like I said, if you really want some good stuff about this, watch the documentaries and listen to the people argue back and forth about whether or not this actually happened. I mean, you either believe them or you don't. I don't believe them. But Father Delaney is, here we go, he's the fly in the ointment. I don't know what his motivation to lie would have been. Unless he was that close with the Lutzes that he just came in on it. I don't know why a priest would do that.
A lot of wild cards when it comes to the validity of this movie. You're completely full of it, and then you get a little bit of potential legitimacy, which kind of gets you going back and forth. For me, I picked this movie. Surprise, surprise. This movie is kind of like a guilty pleasure for me. I relate it now to a modern day Draft Day with Kevin Costner, which is the stupidest movie ever made. But,
you pancake-eating motherfucker.
I watch that movie probably 3 or 4 times a year. I love that movie. And the acting is so bad. And the way they do the draft is just so wrong and incorrect. But I eat it up. That's this movie for me. I eat it up. I love watching this movie, but I admit it is a bad movie. The writing is horrible. The acting is average at best. And I understand why this movie made $80 million in 1979 on a budget of $8 million. The marketing for that era was just, it couldn't have been done any better. It is phenomenal. But I think Rotten Tomatoes sums this one up perfectly. I think being a splat at 30-something? It's probably pretty accurate. And with the audience, 50-50, yeah, I'd say that's pretty accurate too. Is this a movie I'm going to watch again? Hell yeah. It's a guilty pleasure. I love it. But is it a good movie? No. And I agree with you, Ted. The documentaries and the research and the rabbit holes that you go down just watching YouTube videos about this, I mean, it's like 8 hours right there you could spend, and it's probably 8 hours better than watching a movie. So, but hey, if you like Amityville and you like the hype, this is your movie. But when it comes to the overall big picture for me, it's a C. It's average.
I think we all have those movies.
Yeah.
And I think we've all covered at least a couple that we know that are bad movies.
This is not Academy Award material. I think we all know that.
Except the music.
Except the score, which
there is no way in hell
Ted nightmares.
That this
he'll wake up at 3:15.
Should have been.
How was it nominated? We could do a whole podcast on just the Academy. Insane, some of the stuff they've picked and didn't pick and whatever. So we are going to be finishing off Halloween month with Ken's pick, which I've never seen, and I'm looking forward to watching the 1985 release Fright Night with Chris Sarandon.
Don't watch the remake.
Roddy McDowall and Amanda Bearse from Married with Children. You might know her. Virgin eyes on this one,
folks. We're keeping
it
real.
Never seen this.
The original OG.
Yes, never seen this one, so I'm looking forward to it. So I'll give an honest review. So
Ted's never seen it either.
I've seen it.
Really?
Either.
All right. Mm-mm. Well, this should be very interesting then. All right. Awesome. Well, gentlemen, tell us where they can find us on the World Wide Web.
We can be found on X, which is formerly known as
Sounds
Twitter.
Like a porn site.
Thank you, Elon. @HookedOn_movies, as long as X stays in business. And whatever podcast version you're listening to us on, whether it be Apple, Spotify, Good Pods, any one of them, if you can, leave us a 5-star review. It helps us get noticed. It helps us get recognized. Nothing advances us further than word of mouth. If you like what we do, tell a friend. These guys do a good podcast. Because it's been noted that word of mouth spreads podcasts faster than anything else.
If you don't like it, shut the fuck up.
But still listen.
Even if you don't like us, mock us.
We enjoy it.
Ken's
Ken
angry.
Is angry.
Like
don't make
he's
Ken angry. Listen to the podcast.
Give us good reviews and join our Facebook group. And you could read about all the articles that we've been posting out there and join in the conversations. And of course, I'm kidding. If you don't like something that we do, Jennifer Palm.
Constructive criticism is always appreciated.
Then just let us know what you think we could do better, what movies you'd like us to do. We're flexible because we enjoy movies. We just like to talk, as you can tell.
Apparently the last two we haven't enjoyed, so maybe the third one will be a winner, right? Well, thank you, everybody, for listening. You guys got anything you want to say? Or
get out.
Very nice. Yes. Turn off. Yes.
I'm blind. I'm blind.
All right, we can mock this movie, but let's stop there. Well, thank you everybody for listening. As always, thank you and have a pleasant tomorrow.
We'll see you at the movies.
See you next time on Hooked on Movies.
Ken's having way too much fun.